Hey, listeners, a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast is now the Not Crazy Podcast. Same feed, different name. Hosted by Gabe Howard and Jackie Zimmerman. Search for Not Crazy or visit us at psychcentral.com/notcrazy. In the meantime, enjoy this legacy episode of BSP, and we hope you'll check out the new Not Crazy Podcast.
For reasons that utterly escape everyone involved, you're listening to a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. Here are your hosts, Gabe Howard and Michelle Hammer.
Welcome to a bipolar, a schizophrenic, and a podcast. My name is Gabe, and I'm bipolar.
My name is Michelle, and I'm schizophrenic.
Michelle, today we want to talk about people who are mentally ill who lie. I mean, that's really the crux of it. There is a chronic problem in our community of people living with mental illness who lie. And I think that a lot of people really are like, yeah, they're just lying and manipulating constantly. So I thought we just hit this head on. The number one lie that people with mental illness tell is
that they're okay.
We're fine.
Yeah, that they're okay. Yeah.
That's what we hit up. So while everybody is accusing us of being, you know, liars, they're wrong and right all at the same time. We're not lying to get, like, attention and puppies and, like, piles of gold. We're lying to get people to leave us alone because we're scared.
We're lying because we don't want to get locked up in the psych ward.
We don't want to get locked up in a psych ward. We don't want to get arrested. We don't want undue attention drawn to us. We are afraid of what intervention looks like in many, many forms. Obviously, the worst one would be arrest or being in a psychiatric ward.
I know.
Even though we kind of agree that being in a psychiatric ward could be for our own good, still terrifying.
Absolutely. I mean, I learned to lie in college. Gabe, you want to hear this story? It's a doozy.
No, I know. I don't want to hear any of your stories. I want the show to just be me talking from here on out.
So, okay. So everybody listening to the cop story episode, I was kicked out of the dorms for my sophomore year, and I had to get this roommate who we were friends, but she turned out to be a really huge bitch. So I'm not doing well. I'm very depressed. I'm not on medication. Things are weird. I'm not surrounded by all my support system, and my roommate is treating me like I'm a piece of crap. So I find out that a friend of mine might be needing a new roommate in the dorms, and I'm like, maybe I can live with her. How about...
Wait. Hang on. If you got kicked out of the dorms...
Listen, I was not thinking logically. No, this was not a dorm. I was living off campus.
But so then you're living off campus and you got thrown out of that situation because of the, again, aforementioned cop story. And right. Now you needed a new place to live.
Well, I wanted to try to get in a new place to live. And I thought of this genius idea. I'm going to go to the dean of discipline who kicked me out of the dorms. And I'm going to talk to her. And she's going to listen to how I'm feeling. And she's going to, of course, let me back into the dorms. So I just impromptu go to the dean of discipline's office and I start telling her how bad I'm doing. Everything's going so horrible. I'm not feeling well. You know, I'm feeling kind of, she's almost like, are you feeling suicidal at all? And I'm like, you know what? I really need a roommate in my room because I need somebody watching me all the time. I'm not doing well. She goes, well, did you feel suicidal this morning at all? And I was like, I didn't know what to say because I was like, I really got to let her get me in the dorms. And I'm thinking it's a great idea having, I really thought this conversation of her me telling her how horrible I'm doing and how bad I'm feeling was the greatest idea because she would totally put me back in the dorms with a friend. But apparently, when you say you're having suicidal feelings to, like, a, you know, the dean of discipline, they're gonna kind of watch you and perhaps call the cops on you and give you, they take your cell phone number, give you some tissues, and then walk you out of the office. Okay,
hang on. I just want to be clear, though. You were feeling this way. You were being completely honest with this woman about your feelings and your struggle and everything that was going on in your life.
Yes, and I seriously believed she would let me back in the dorms because of this. This is what I thought was going to happen.
You thought that if you were honest with her, she would honor your wishes and give you what you felt you needed to be better.
Right.
But what happened instead?
So... I go, this is at this point, I did not have a lacrosse coach at this point. We were still intermittent. And who was coaching us was the athletic director, the field hockey coach. And the field hockey coach were helping us out.
Isn't field hockey and lacrosse the same thing?
Absolutely not. They're completely different. Look it up. So I go to my next class. And I'm walking up the staircase, and in the staircase door, there's a little window opening. And I see, through the window, the athletic director, the field hockey coach, and two police officers right outside my classroom door. And I go, oh, fuck. And I knew why they were there. So I turned around and ran away. I run away and run into my friend's dorm. And I told them, like, I did this morning. And now there's cops. There was cops. The athletic director and the other coach were waiting outside my dorm with some police officers. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? This is not good. This is not good. This is not good. Realized that I had 3 missed calls on my phone. It was from the athletic director. And I call her back and she just goes, Hammer, what's going on? We got a call from the dean of discipline. We'd really like to talk to you. How about you come to my office right now? And I was like, okay. I show up to her office. We're all, you know, I sit at the table with her and the field hockey coach, and we go, so, Hammer, we're here. You're trying to get back in the dorms, and we're having this whole conversation. And then apparently she had called my best friend Jenna. And Jenna shows up as well as also. And we're all in there and we're all having a whole conversation about like what happened and how the dean of discipline basically called the cops on me. And her decision was to send me to the hospital, and that's what was going to happen. So everybody in the room was basically convincing me that it was already called, it was already mandated, and I had to be sent to the hospital. There was no way I could get out of it. So because of that, because of saying that to the dean of discipline, I got shoved off to the hospital for 6 days. It was terrible.
Okay.
So that taught me, don't open your big fat mouth ever again.
But you needed to be in the hospital. So isn't all's well that ends well? We can't let you walk around suicidal. I mean, do you honestly think that your feelings could have been resolved because you got a new place to live? I mean, is that really the cure for schizophrenia? To give people better apartments or puppies or... I mean, surely you acknowledge that when somebody says they're suicidal, we can't just, like, hand them puppies. I mean, we got to do something for them. We got to help people.
I understand. If I was her and if I was in that situation, I probably would have done the same thing. But I realize what I said to her wasn't the best things that I said to her. I feel like I was more saying things to her to try to get my roommate situation switched rather than really say everything I was feeling. But it was just, it really taught me trust the people that you talk to and make sure they know what you're saying, because suicidal thoughts in my head at that time was something that I thought almost every day. But as I always thought, as long as I don't take it seriously and actually want to do it, I'm okay. So asking me, have you felt suicidal today, was just like, oh, did you brush your hair? You know?
Suicidal thoughts are common for people with mental illness. They're common in depression. They're common in bipolar disorder. They're common in schizophrenia. And believe it or not, that works on a spectrum as well. If every single time somebody with mental illness is thinking about suicide, we cart them off to the psychiatric ward, that's going to cause a lot of trauma and a lot of damage. It's not to say that people who are thinking about suicide shouldn't be intervened. Absolutely, they should be. But you know, I thought about suicide every single day of my life. And just because I started to get medication and treatment doesn't mean that it went away all at once. These were very difficult questions for me to answer because sometimes people would overreact. But, you know, a lot of times in our society, people underreact. We have a chronic problem with suicide in young adults, in teenagers right now. And that's clearly because people aren't taking suicide seriously enough. And it is always, and I'm going to say it until I'm blue in the face, and I think you'll agree with me, Michelle, it's incredibly unfortunate that the police are called when somebody is suicidal. I mean, talk about throwing gas on a fire.
I know.
I feel worthless and I want to die. Oh, we're going to call the police, which, of course, conjures up images of punishment.
I had no option. If I said no, I didn't want to go, I would have been handcuffed and forced in the car. So, I mean, I had to go.
So you felt strongly like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just to clarify, you were feeling bad and you were feeling vaguely suicidal, but you were trying to help yourself by getting a place to live. You were trying to advocate for yourself and find a place to live. And you feel like because you are advocating with honesty, it caused a 6-day hospitalization. Where maybe if you would have left that part out and said, Instead, I'm getting better. I'm working harder. I learned a lot. I'm working with a therapist. I just need a place to stay. Why do you need a place to stay? Because everybody needs a place to live so I can continue getting better. You wouldn't have gone to the hospital for 6 days.
The thing is, at 19, I didn't know how to verbalize that at all. I didn't know how to verbalize my feelings. At this point in my life, I wasn't on any medication whatsoever. I didn't know how I was feeling.
This is before the schizophrenia diagnosis, so you didn't even know that.
Yeah.
This was really early on.
It was. I was just 19. I didn't know anything, but I
only learned, your mom and your friends knew you were nuts.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I mean, and the athletic director, yeah. I mean, we had the athletic director. She said something to me like, you know, despite everything you've been through, you're doing a good job. But she had confused me with the other Michelle on the team. And then I said to her, what do you mean by, you know, everything I've been through? And she goes, well, what do you mean? She goes, wait. What year are you? And I said, I'm a sophomore. And she just goes, oh my God, that was you. And I'm like, yeah, that was me. She goes, oh. And then she realized that I was the one that got sent to the hospital last year, that my coach brought me to the hospital my freshman year. So then it was like her always kind of making sure I'm okay, stuff like that. But like when I got my new coach and she knew about situations, and actually my new coach told me that before she took the job, she was told on the phone that there was a girl on the team with a mental illness who had been sent to the psych ward previously. Could she handle that situation? And she said yes. Like, that was on her interview, she told me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this was the coach that ultimately helped save your life.
Right. And it's just interesting with her because I feel like, in a way, I did manipulate her because I told her if she ever sent me to the hospital, I would never talk to her again. I also did say to her, my mom sold me. I said, well, my mom said if I ever go to the hospital again, I'm not going to be allowed back at school. And I was good on my lacrosse team, so my coach didn't want me taken out of school. So I did manipulate her in a sense. I kind of really did.
Did your mom say that?
She kind of did. She goes, if you do this one more time, you're not going back to school. My mom kind of said that. I don't know how flippant it really was, but I would say that because I know one time my coach said to me, you know, something about feeling suicidal. And I said, I think that every day. She goes, you can't tell me that. I'm like, no. I think it every day, but as long as I don't think it's a good idea, it's okay. And she just goes, she just looks at me like that's just the most illogical thing ever. And I'm like, no, that's how it is.
But it is, see, that's what's incredibly fascinating to me. It is illogical. It's almost like you have a mental illness.
Yeah. Yeah.
People say things to, they're like, well, didn't you realize that that was stupid? No, it seemed very normal to me. I sort of had a similar situation where, you know, I was taken to the hospital and committed because I didn't know what was going on. About a year later, I was taken to the hospital again because I was feeling, I was feeling incredibly bad. And my second wife, we were married at this point, was very worried about me. And I did not want to go. I did not want to go to the hospital at all. But she told me that I had to go or that she was going to leave. And I was more afraid of losing her than I was of, you know, mental illness. So we went to the emergency room and the social worker asked me if I was suicidal. And I immediately said no. Even though that wasn't true, I was having suicidal thoughts. I just felt like I could control them. But I immediately said no. And she asked me if I had access to firearms. And I said, well, I'm an adult male with no felony record, so I guess. And she just looked at me and I didn't have access to any firearms. I was just being flippant. And then she asked me if I had a suicide plan. And I said, well, I do own the book Final Exit.
I don't even know what that book is. Is that a joke? Was that a joke, or is it actually a book about killing
There is
yourself?
A book called Final Exit. Can you believe somebody wrote a book on how to kill yourself?
Seriously?
Yeah, it's called Final Exit. You've never heard of this?
No.
Yeah, it's not meant to be funny. And it shows the state of mental illness in our country in the 80s, I believe, when it came out. I'm not sure of its exact publication date, but yeah, don't look it up. It's not a good idea.
I will not look that up, but I have Googled how to kill yourself.
And I think that a lot of people have, but the person trying to keep me alive, my wife said, listen, can you make him contract for safety? And by this point, the social worker said, you know, those contracts aren't legally binding.
Like contract. Yes, I will be safe. I'm going to sign this contract. Yes, because his signature really, really means everything, right?
But they do work. Have you ever contracted for safety?
I've never contracted for safety, but I've made a treatment plan of when you're feeling suicidal, do all of these things instead.
I too have made a treatment plan. As much as I want to make fun of the contract for safety, they do work. And I am curious as to why social workers use them only to mock them. It was not a good experience. You're really giving me nothing here. I'm really giving the whole time I'm talking, you're just staring blankly at me.
I'm trying to understand. What is a contract for safety? I don't even understand what that is. Like, I, Gabe, will not hurt myself ever again. Signed, Gabe. This date. What is a contract for safety? I don't even understand what that is.
Hold that thought, Michelle. We want to hear from BetterHelp.com.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. Secure, convenient, and affordable online counseling. All counselors are licensed, accredited professionals. Anything you share is confidential. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist whenever you feel it's needed. A month of online therapy often costs less than a single traditional face-to-face session. Go to BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral and experience 7 days of free therapy to see if online counseling is right for you. BetterHelp.com/PsychCentral.
Gabe, what were you saying?
The social worker sits down with you and says, I want you to sign a contract with me. I want you to contract for safety. And the contracts usually work something like this. They say, you understand you're important, initial here. You understand that your family loves you, initial here. You understand that you have made a promise to your, you know, wife, children, family, mother, somebody who's important, that you will not harm yourself if we allow you to go home, initial here. And then, you know, you understand that you have these options available if you get worse. Call 911, do this, et cetera.
Like a treatment plan, that little section.
I mean, kind of, yeah. And then in the end, after going over everything one at a time, making these promises, et cetera, and then signing it, they tell you that you have promised and signed a contract that you will not harm yourself. And then the way that these really work well is you sign it with somebody. Like, I signed it with my wife. So my wife and I agreed that I wouldn't do this. So when I got sicker, and this, I want to be clear, they do work. When I got sicker, I thought to myself, I signed a contract with my wife. I can't break a promise to her. I was willing to die. I'm not going to lie. I was more than willing to die, but I wasn't willing to break a promise to her.
That's good. But so did you sign that to just get out of the hospital?
She didn't want me to sign it at all. She said they're not legally binding.
I just don't understand. You broke your treatment plan. You're going to go on the people's court. Like, I mean, like...
It's unfortunate because they could tell that I was lying. They could tell that I was not giving honest answers. So they decided that they would just ignore me. And that's why they said things like treatment plans are not legally binding. Or I'm sorry. And that's why they said things like contracting for safety is not legally binding. That's why they didn't waste their time doing a treatment plan. So they were willing to send me out in the world with absolutely no help because they could tell that I wasn't being honest. And it's sad.
Yeah. I mean, like,
they did. They let me leave. And
yeah,
nothing bad happened. Obviously, I'm still here. My wife's solution, my ex-wife's solution, she was my wife at the time. Her solution was to take me to a different hospital. And I got better help there. I was not admitted, but I was offered a partial treatment program. And this was very helpful to me because I acknowledged fully that I needed help, but I was terrified of being locked in again. So they offered me a partial hospitalization. It's where I slept in my own bed at night, but every morning I got up and I drove to the hospital and I stayed there for anywhere from 4 to 8 hours a day, depending on the day, and went through all kinds of treatment, whether it be group therapy, one-on-one therapy, or, you know, even art therapy, occupational therapy. But then when it was over, I got to go home.
You went to a much better hospital than I ever went to because I didn't do any of that in any of the hospitals that I went to.
One place
had group therapy. Everywhere else did not. Nothing.
Wow. You were in a hospital that didn't have group therapy?
Yes.
Of all the treatment that I have ever received in my life, I really personally got a lot. I'm hesitant to say that I got the most out of it, but I gotta tell you, I think I did. I think I got the most out of group therapy.
Yeah.
Being in a room with people who had achieved what I was trying to achieve gave me so much hope.
The one thing I learned from group therapy, there was just one guy there, I learned about what triggers were. I didn't understand what triggers were. It's just that, like, you see yourself doing one thing, then the next thing, then the next thing, then the next thing, and then it escalates. That's what I learned what triggers were, and that's how I understood with when one thing happens, it'll lead to the next thing, and that's how I kind of realized the steps. Because I never understand there were steps and like a step before you fall off the edge. That's the only thing that I ever learned in the hospital that I found out to be beneficial. Everything else I learned was what not to do to get me into the hospital, that will get me in the hospital again. I think I said this in a previous podcast where my coach brought me to the health center the next day, and the guy was yelling at me, why didn't you follow your treatment plan? And I said, I did. I called somebody. That's on my treatment plan. And he's just yelling at me, and he's like, well, if you don't tell me what you had in your hand, you don't tell me what dangerous thing you had, we're sending you to the hospital. I'm like, no, you're not, because I didn't do anything. I used my treatment plan. I did what I was supposed to do. I got rid of what was dangerous. I didn't do anything. I did exactly what I was supposed to do. There's no reason for me to go. And then they said, were you suicidal? And I just said, nope, not at all. Why'd you get something dangerous? I don't know, no reason. Then I just started lying to his face, just so I wouldn't go to the hospital. That's when the lies started. After he said, if you don't tell me, you're going to the hospital, then I just started lying straight to his face. Were you suicidal? Nope, not at all. Why did you have that? No reason.
Isn't it amazing that mentally ill people, when we're terrified, we become like 80-year-old men. We won't admit that we can't bend over and pick something up,
mm-hmm.
Or we won't admit that we're sick. We won't admit that we lose our breath walking up a flight of stairs. I love my grandfather. The man's 87 years old, and in his mind, he's still 30. Like, I am positive if somebody offered him $100,000 to go one round in the UFC, he'd sign up and think he had a shot to win.
Dude, the guy said to me, he said, you said you were going to kill yourself. And I said, no, I didn't. Prove it. I think I said, prove it.
But that stubbornness gets us in trouble. I mean, seriously, people die because they're stubborn. But more importantly, people die because they're stubborn. And the people that we come into contact with, like police officers and emergency room technicians and even our friends and family, they don't know how to work with us to handle our mental illness, our trauma, our fear, and our stubbornness. So they just start yelling at us. So, of course, what do? We curl up in a ball or start yelling back. And in the end, we don't get what we need to be well. And that's ultimately visited upon us.
Like, it's almost like an alcohol addiction. You know somebody has an alcohol addiction. You try to bring it up, they'll deny. They'll do anything.
I like how you said alcoholic addiction. It reminds me of like somebody that only dates alcoholics.
But you know what I'm trying to get at, in a sense.
I hope you do,
because I was confusing myself. You know how I am.
I mean, I'm always confused when you talk, but I have taken extensive Michelle training, so I am always able to figure out what you mean.
Do all you gentle viewers know that when I was...
Gentle viewers? They're viewing us now.
My gentle listeners, for many months, I would tell Gabe via text message that I was on the subway and I had no service. And then Gabe thought I was at the Subway sandwich place all the time, not realizing that New York has Subways and I'm on the train. Gabe thought I was always at the Subway sandwich spot, yes. He didn't realize that.
We don't have subways in Columbus.
I'm in New York, and I would say I'm in the subway. I don't have service. Why would I always be in Subway sandwich shop?
I thought you got your coffee there.
Oh, Gabe, I can't even. I just can't. I learned from these experiences that being honest, possibly with the wrong person, could get you sent away. But maybe if you have a better rapport or friendlier or somebody understands you more, you can talk to that person and have a more open and honest conversation, and they won't just send you straight to the hospital. So I've always found that I can have a more open and honest conversation with maybe a friend, maybe my doctor, maybe somebody that just understands me more, not the dean of discipline. So yes, you can be honest with some people. Don't try to be honest with other people when you're trying to get yourself out of trouble in some sense. You know what I'm
Michelle,
saying?
Michelle, this is why conversations about mental health and mental illness are so incredibly important, and they should be ongoing. Often, these conversations only happen when a crisis is occurring or about to occur. if you had a better understanding of your health and your illness at 19, you could have talked to your mother, your friends, and you could say, hey, look, if I start to get sick, I'm afraid to go to the hospital. So I want to nip this in the bud before I get that sick. So I promise to always be honest with you as long as you promise me that going to the hospital is a last resort. It's one of the things that I'm most fortunate about having my wife. She knows how terrified I am of the hospital. So we always try to call my therapist, my psychiatrist, my doctor before we get to the point where I have to go behind the locked door. So she's a great ally to have, but she's a great ally because we had all of those conversations when I was well. It's always better to plan before crisis than try to plan during crisis. It's why, you know, people do fire drills.
I mean, do you have like that whole trigger thing? Do you see the triggers in yourself or like the steps of what leads you to get to that certain point? Because that's what I see a lot in myself. I know if something's happening and I'm feeling a certain way, I go, oh, I need to take my medication. Medication, I need to take it now because it's only going to get worse.
Yes, I have 16 years worth of experience managing bipolar disorder at a very high level. So I can spot tiny little shifts now. I couldn't in the beginning. In the beginning, I really only had, you know, healthy or unhealthy, but I learned. Now I have optimal, a little bit below, kind of a problem, getting sicker, then crisis. And I understand the differences. You've got to learn that. So many people get well and then they never think about their mental illness or their mental health ever again. They never talk to anybody. They never educate anybody. They never learn anymore. That is wrong. When you are healthy, continue the conversation with those around you. Make them your allies. Make them your friends. We need as much support as humanly possible.
Do you think that's the difference between like being recovered and not being recovered? Like being recovered, you understand your illness, you understand your triggers, you understand what will set you off, and you do things to try to help yourself live the best life you can. But when you're not recovered, you're still in that struggle of trying to get where you can feel comfortable in your life and trying to understand what sets you off and what doesn't and what you need to do.
Yes, I do think that recovery looks different for every single person, and I want to honor that and respect it. But I got to tell you, if you're in denial about your mental illness, or you only believe that recovery is cured, never think about it ever again, you're probably going to relapse. I have accepted that I live with bipolar disorder, and I have to manage it every single day.
Right.
And I think that because of that, I am more likely to be in recovery for the rest of my life. It's not a guarantee.
That's true.
But I think it's more likely.
Right. I mean, I consider myself recovered too, but I mean, I still talk to myself. People still notice me talking to myself. And some friends will even ask me, they're like, so you take your medication, but you'll still talk to yourself? And I'm like, yeah, like I do. I mean, and I always say, as long as I'm not thinking really horrible, mean, horrible, bloody thoughts, I'm okay. And if they're just not intruding into my life, I'm okay. You know, I'm still recovered because I can handle them. I can process them. I can just snap out of it. And it doesn't really hinder me in friendship and everything. In work, it was difficult, but I found a way to manage my life in a very good way, considering I still have symptoms, but they're nothing like they would be when I was 19 years old.
There's a lot of things to learn when you're healthy. When I started to get healthier, I kept going to group therapy because, again, I liked it so much. And one day I was sitting there and nothing was wrong. I was having a good day. I want to be very, very clear. I was happy when I got there. And for the most part, I was happy when I left. But I said a couple of things about dating and how I was looking forward to dating, and I had a date later that week. And the woman sitting next to me started to panic a little bit. And, you know, she got very uncomfortable, and the group person asked her if she was okay. And she said, I'm just very triggered about the idea of a man dating a woman. I don't like it. And she left the room. The group facilitator looked at me and said, she's a domestic violence survivor. You did nothing wrong, but talk of relationships and talk of a man pursuing a woman like you were with having a date triggered her.
Yeah.
It's okay. Continue. She handled it correctly. You handled it correctly.
Yeah, perfect.
The reason that I'm pointing that out is because I learned that anybody can trigger anybody. And that made me really rethink all of the people that accidentally hurt my feelings, mm-hmm. that accidentally gave me a panic attack. And I saw for the first time life from their perspective. Because I didn't mean to trigger her and upset her and make her have to leave the room. Just like all the people around me didn't mean to do it for me. And that these were big moments in my life. So if I would have decided, oh, I'm fine, I don't need to go to group therapy today, I never would have learned that lesson. And this is why I tell people, it's not about getting out of the crisis and then forgetting about your illness. It's about learning and managing and working every day.
Yeah.
Every day. Now, you don't have to start a podcast. Don't be crazy. But I get a lot by talking to people with mental illness every day. They teach me so much. It's so incredible. And it is genuinely, I'm going to be sweet for a moment. It is why I like working with you, Michelle.
Aww.
Because I get to talk to somebody that's like me and understands me. And we get to exchange a lot of good ideas and information.
Yeah, definitely.
Even when you're wrong.
No, I'm never wrong. You're always wrong.
I'm always wrong. You're always wrong.
You're always wrong.
Well, one of us is wrong.
My brain is bigger.
It's because it's swelled.
From my concussion.
From your concussion. Michelle, it's always a pleasure to hang out with you. This has been another episode of A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and a Podcast. Remember, you can get the Define Normal t-shirt to help us keep the lights on around here at store.psychcentral.com. We always ask for reviews and social media shares because, hey, Gabe and Michelle need to be famous. Remember, this is the only podcast for mentally ill people by mentally ill people. Let's be proud of it. We'll see everybody next week.
Sugar!
You've been listening to A Bipolar, A Schizophrenic, and a Podcast. If you love this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Head over to iTunes or your preferred podcast app to subscribe, rate, and review. To work with Gabe, go to GabeHoward.com. To work with Michelle, go to Schizophrenic.nyc. For free mental health resources and online support groups, head over to PsychCentral.com. The show's official website is PsychCentral.com/BSP. You can email us at show@PsychCentral.com. Thank you for listening, and share widely.